All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. April the 6th, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Side. Hope it's great wherever you are at. Woke up this morning sober, which is always a blessing. I'm grateful for that. Came to work. Finished my day. Thought I would maybe sit down and see if I can chat a bit and catch up, see what's going on. Not a lot going on today. Have some family in town we're going to hang out with. Woke up this morning. Well, I guess it started yesterday. Our freezer went down. And my wife's like, somebody left the freezer door open. I was like, oh, shit. That was probably me, right? So I had to confess. I guess I took blame. I had to take something out of the freezer the other day. I'm like, maybe I didn't shut the door all the way. I don't know. And got my beating, of course. And then over time realized the freezer just isn't working. So it wasn't me. But that's okay. We still have a problem to fix. So we got to address the freezer. I don't know what we're going to do, honestly. I don't know what we're going to do. We'll have to figure that out. I took everything that was like sort of valuable, like meat and stuff like that, and put it into our other freezer. This was just like this cute, adorable little freezer, right, that we got for our garage. We didn't need a huge walk-in or a, you know, the kind that you open up like a crypt. We just needed a little bit of overflow, and it was a perfect little freezer, but it has died. So Godspeed, rest in peace, freezer. We will have to figure out another plan. I told my wife, just grab, you know, because I grabbed all the meat and stuff this morning. I was like, just grab what you can and then really just maybe we'll throw away the rest. There's like deer meat in there. I had this idea that I wanted to start eating deer meat and fucking shit tastes terrible. I know if you prepare it correctly, it's good, but in my world, that shit tastes terrible. And so I don't know. We may throw the deer meat away. I am sorry. I'm sorry to waste it. Sorry, deer. I did not shoot the deer. I just bought the meat. So. But yeah, we're trying to figure that out. And then, not a lot going on. We're going out to dinner with my father tonight. My brother's in town. Like I said, family's in town. So we're going to, you know, get together and hang out with them. And that'll be great. I did go to a meeting last night. It's so funny. I try to think, you know, I like doing this podcast. Try to think of things to talk about. Things that are going on in my life. Things that I sort of, you know, realize, right? My eyes open up to certain things at certain times. And, you know, it's always, like yesterday I talked about this two-headed disease that I suffer from. You know, the one clearly when I put alcohol in my mouth, I can't stop. It is a bizarre thing that happens, you know, the spiritual malady and the spiritual imbalance. And it seems like when I pour liquor in my mouth, I'm just pouring the imbalance in, right? I'm just pouring the devil right into me. And then, you know, the other disease, the one that talks me into doing that, right? The one that says, maybe we should try it again. It's a two-pronged crown. And the latter one, right? And I don't know which one comes first, right? You got to have something that talks you into it. So it's probably the self-centered side of me. The battle, right? And, you know, I went to a meeting last night. I went to the meeting on Friday night, and it was interesting because two different people talked about, and we had a great speaker, shared his story, which was awesome. And then a couple different people talked about, you know, they thought they could still drink again, right? This one guy who's been coming, I don't know his name. I wouldn't say it anyway, but he knew mine, right? And he's one of these guys that, you know, has come in and because he has to, right? And that to me is, it's everyone's journey, right? I can't say, man, you don't have to, you get to, you just don't really understand that concept for quite a while, right? I never did. I had to for a long time and never even thought that I got to, right? And so, but I listened to this guy's story last night, and he had been doing okay, right? He said, I've been coming to meetings. He goes, but I just thought that I might have one more night, right? I was going to just do one more night of drinking, and then that's it. I'm coming into the program 100%. And he was on probation and had gotten in all this trouble, right? And so He had almost gotten arrested, right? His probation officer had called him in and done a test, and I guess he was a little dirty, but the guy's like, listen, I'm going to get, this is your one warning. And so this voice, right, came to him and said, listen, I think we could do one more, right? And that's the voice that I'm talking about. That is the disease that this program can help us with, and because it does come back, right? They say that that guy's over there doing push-ups, and eventually he walks over, and it happened to him, and he's like, I'm just going to do one more time. And then he did his one more time. And then his probation officer called the next day and said, I need to see you, right? Need to, you know, I guess you come in and blow. I don't know, blow or pee, but I guess he tested positive and he went to jail. And it was, you know, because he shared after I shared. And I shared that same thing, you know, because I listened to the guy that had opened the meeting and I talked about this real, you know, it's not a revelation, but it is reality, at least for me. I have a two-part disease, and the one when I put the alcohol in my mouth definitely can't be stopped, but the one that has the voice that comes to me, right, and says that maybe it's a good idea, I can work on. It can be stopped through the steps of this program, working with the sponsor, and trying to help another alcoholic. We do start to realize that that, for me at least, is my main threat today, right?
Thank you so much. Check. Hold on a minute, it ain't time to leave. Tell me how you're feeling one more time. For long years, and I just can't believe that I'm still yours and you're still mine. Why?
Girl from Matthews, call us, where's it, Pretty Girl from Matthews, that's live, Avid Brothers, great song, but yeah, you know, it's, I hate to, you know, it's sad to hear, I mean, the guy's back, right, I'm back, it doesn't work out there, and I'm back, and unfortunately, you know, it's sort of like talking about my friend the other day, now we spend the next 4 years digging out of the hole, right? We could have started over without all that drama, right? It's like being on your best behavior because in the end, you don't want to spend the next 4 years digging out of the hole, being on extended probation, right? The fines, the lawyers, all the shit that happens when we decide we have a good idea. And I think a lot of this happens. I know for me, you know, I drank, but I think a lot of it was because I really did not work the steps, right? It is... There is something weird about having to get sober. There was another guy in there last night after the meeting that I ended up meeting, and a buddy of mine was standing talking to him. He goes, he's got 48 hours. And I'm like, man, congratulations. That's awesome, right? And I go, you know, it's good to have you. And he goes, I have to do this. And I go, well, yeah, I appreciate that. And he goes, I have to. And I go, well, you know, you don't, right? You don't have to. He goes, oh, no, I definitely have to. And I go, I appreciate that, but it can be worse, right? You look pretty good, right? This guy's had a nice haircut, right? Had nice clothes. Had all his teeth, right? Didn't have any black eyes or stitches. And I'm like, you know, it can get worse, right? You get to do this, right? The problem is it's hard to explain that, right? It's hard to explain that. And it's sometimes, you know, I don't know if it's even worth the effort, right? Because I remember I never thought I got to do this. This did not seem like a gift, right? This did not seem like a perk, a benefit. I did not feel like I was winning. I felt like I was losing, and not only losing the battle, but losing my best friend, right? Losing the main thing that keeps me entertained, I suppose, right? You know, I think about one of the things I struggle with today is just I'm bored, right? I'm just bored. I don't go out. I go to meetings, and I come home, and then I watch TV, and I just go to bed and sort of do it all over again. I just don't have a lot of stuff going on, which is good. I'm grateful for that. But, you know, alcohol used to be the entertainment, right? I could sit inside my house by myself drinking vodka and be absolutely entertained. I mean, psychotown, but, you know, sometimes, you know, recovery's boring, right? And so, you know, you're not only giving up the fight, but you're giving up your best friend. It is a long-term relationship, depending on how long it is that you have been out there. And one of the interesting or coolest things about the guy who shared last night, he was an older gentleman, and he came in his 70s, right? And somebody shared this. I always think this is like, how did you get through all that life, right, drinking? Right, my wheels flew off the bus real early, right? And especially when a guy has like a wife and kids and his kids are in college and he's got a job. I'm like, how did you do that? Because I couldn't do it. I could barely hold a job. Nobody wanted to be with me. Maybe relationships back then started off early and they were just more committed to each other. I don't know, but I'm just always in shock how a guy can be in his 70s and get sober. And, you know, he shared that, you know, one day he was sitting, you know, and drinking, he had a handle and he was sitting in his garage and he just decided to get sober. And, you know, to me, that always sounds like an amazing story. I think it's 1 in 100 that do that, you know, because I don't think, for me at least, that it was possible that I could come up with a decision, right? Maybe I should just quit drinking and we'll start tomorrow. No. Right. I had poured the devil in my mouth, and so I was possessed. He was in me, right? The devil was in me, and he was running the show, driving the boat, running the bus, whatever you want to call it. I really had no say in what I did, right? I would have glimpses of ideas, you know, maybe midday, but, you know, that devil would be like, you can forget all that nonsense. We're going to stop and get some beer, and then we're going to get some vodka, and we're going to do what we do. And I had to get punched in the mouth, right? People have to crash their cars, cheat on their wives, whatever it is that people do that creates that absolute humiliation, right? Like the guy last night said to me, I have to do this. And I didn't really dig into the story, but I know that whatever happened, you know, the night before or two nights before was a humiliating, ego-devastating moment for him, right? I could see it in his eyes. I could see the pain, right? The pain is not only you're dealing with the fact that you're quitting alcohol, but you also have just had some event, right? Like Anthony Kiedis said, some event that allows that little window to open just a smidgen that we can jump through, because for the rest of the 99 out of 100 of us, we just don't find the option to quit, right? And I know it's happened, so I'm not going to say it's impossible. I just don't always know if the truth is been completely put out there, right? Because did I ever want to get sober? No. Did I want to stop drinking and driving? Did I want to stop behaving the way that I was behaving? Yes. But did I want to quit drinking? No. And I never wanted to quit drinking. In fact, it took me to get my ass completely kicked for me to be so embarrassed and ashamed and mortified, right? Not only had I gotten beat up, now I had stitches, now I was supposed to go to work. I had to call someone and they saw me. It was just, oh my God, it was like the bottom of the barrel. And that just seemed to kick the devil out. And out he went. And I was able to, you know, grasp onto this program that night. And but it still wouldn't be enough, right? I still would go back out and drink because that is the part of this program that we can work on. The voice, right? When that relationship comes a knocking, right? And all you remember are the fun times and all you remember are, you know, the great relationships and like there were many, right? You know, if you'd asked me the day after I got punched in the mouth, I'd tell you exactly how many stitches I got, how embarrassed I was, how ashamed and embarrassed and mortified and how I apologize and I'm so sorry and please forgive me for all that I've ever done, right? But you ask me a year later and it's like, I don't know, maybe a couple stitches, right? I don't really, those memories seem to fade, right? And the embarrassment and then what it took for me to make that choice seems to fade away and how mortified I was in my life fades away. And I'm like, I guess it wasn't so bad, right? And that is just the beginning, right? And then it just starts. And it can come in weird ways, right? It isn't just this voice that says, hey, you should try drinking, right? It can start off as like, you know, why is your wife always nagging? Or why is your boss always nagging? Or your husband, right? Whatever it is, it can start to undermine other little things, right? Because in the end, this disease wants you alone, by yourself, anybody that has some sort of influence on you doing good out of your life, right? The closest ones out of your life, right? They don't want anybody giving you any good advice, right? First of all, let's attack the meetings. And that's exactly what happened to me. It was like, all of a sudden, I didn't like the way they collected the money. I've said it 100 times, right? It was just something stupid like that. And then the voice is like, we'll find another meeting, man. We can't stay at this. Look at this. What is going on here, right? And so you're like, okay, right? It's undermining that first line of defense, right? The meetings. And the next thing you know, I'm not going to meetings. And then who's next? My wife. My wife was next. And then we're like, all right, well, maybe we'll figure out a deal, right? First of all, we got to proclaim that we are better, right? And I remember the phone call, and I said, you know what? I think I can maybe drink some beer. I feel like it's been like 5 years. I feel pretty good. And she was like, really? And this is coming from a person that had, you know, 6 months ago really been beating the drum of recovery, working on my program, all of that stuff, right? And now I've completely flipped a switch and said, yeah, I think I'm better. Right, I think I can do it. I remember I went to this bar to eat with my neighbor and his wife, and my wife was working, and I just decided I was going to have a drink. And I told her, I said, I think I can drink again. And she's like, okay, all right. So now we've gotten rid of the meetings, right? And now we've flipped my wife, and that was my second line of defense. And, you know, immediately I'm not calling anybody, right? I had this great group of friends that I would talk to, my buddy Jimmy Kay, my buddy Scott, all these great people, you know, that were so important to me getting sober early on, and I stopped calling them, right? And so that was my other line of defense. So all the lines of defense that I had built up, this disease started it to undermine, right? And then finally, you know, I can drink, and then I started drinking, right? And I had created a deal. You know, I had a plan, a program, a drinking program that I went over with my wife that we both agreed on. It sounded really good, which was that I would have just a couple beers a night. Couple beers a night. And, you know, what was weird was like this, how quickly, right? I had been sober and how quickly I slid back into this weird, sick routine of like even going to a liquor store, right? I remember that's one of the things was at the end of my drinking. It was like, you know, do these people think I'm an alcoholic because I'm buying all this vodka, right? And so all of a sudden I'm back in that world, right? And I could see my hand put that bottle, right? And the two beers a night was the deal that I created with my addiction and my wife so that I could now be allowed back into the arena, right? The two beers was the arena, but what I would do is I would buy vodka, and then I would drink my vodka, right? Because the two-beer plan lasted about one day, right? Because just like I talked about the first part of my disease, once I pour the devil back in me, he's in, right? Let go of the wheel, Tom. You're not running the show at all anymore. And so the two beer deal was the one that he tricked both of us. He tricked me and my wife, right? I was like, yeah, we could probably just do two beers. We'll do that. It's a good idea. High five. Right? High five there. And once those two beers went in my mouth, I poured the devil back in and let go of the wheel, Tom, because you are no longer driving this car. And immediately I went back to buying vodka, and I would get off work and I would drink vodka. I'd buy just a pint, right? It can make two big giant glasses of vodka and grapefruit, pound those before my wife got home. And then I would, you know, obey the deal we had made on what I would drink, which was my two beers, right? And my God, the shit, right? Maybe can I, honey, do you think maybe I could have a third tonight, right? Oh, the deal. I'm so embarrassed of like the shit that I would ask her, you know, to put her through, like she was now the beer police. And I've been that side too, right? I've been that, you know, and it was just awful. And then off to the races I went, and it just, I remember being at my house one day, and my buddy James, who lived over in this area, was over in, I guess, Baltimore or something, and was coming through, and he just stopped by one day. And I remember a knock at the door, and I opened, it was him, and I was back into my addiction, right? He was talking to deviled up Tom, because I wasn't drunk. I may have been drinking at that time. I may have had one drink. I remember the curtains were closed and it was dark, and he walks in and he goes, how's it going? And I'm like, good, good, good. And he would later tell me, because I knew something was wrong, right? I knew it, because, you know, we're just different people when we pour the devil into us, right? We walk, we talk, we smile, we lean, we eat, we do all of our shit different. We're just like a different, it's like being possessed. And he knew it. And, you know, he stayed for a little bit and then left. But, you know, then the devil, now that it's got me, let's get rid of everybody. And, you know, eventually I woke up to an empty house. You know, I've shared the story. And, but that, you know, it took that, right? I don't recommend drinking, right? And I wish I didn't have to go through that. I wish I didn't have to put my ex-wife through that. I wish I didn't have to put a lot of people through that, but it is what it is. But I tell you, on the other side of it today, I see all of it, right? I see, you know, when I start having issues with people, my friends, my wife, other things, I start realizing, you know, this is just this weird attempt, right, to start separating me from other things, right? The disease is smart. You know, the disease, I'm not the guy that's going to watch a TV show, see a commercial, and go, I think I'll drink, right? No. This disease will get me in a fight with my wife, will start to push away my family, will start to have conversations with me, start telling me how great I am, how much I deserve it, right? You don't need a wife. You didn't have a wife that long. You don't need a wife. Get rid of your wife. What's a wife going to do, right? It starts pushing these people out of your life, and the next thing you're alone, and you're drinking again, and it's cunning, baffling. So that's why, you know, it's so important, right, to really understand that this is a two-part disease, and the part that with the voices and undermining us, we can work on that, right? But once you pour the devil in, if you're struggling and continuing day after day to pour the devil in, it's one thing. But when you go from sober and decide to drink, when you reintroduce the devil back into you, man, that's rough. And it is tough to get those people back, right? Because, you know, the devil is a squatter. And the devil will squat on your soul. And he ain't leaving, right? And it takes, you know, the A-team to get his ass out of there. It's usually jail, institutions, and unfortunately death, right? Some humiliating moment, right? Because once I started, and I didn't, you know, even though I was aware, I had forgotten about all of my history of drinking when I started to try drinking again, and I was really amazed how I couldn't stop, how I was obsessed. It obsessed me to drink. And the other thing I started right away doing was smoking cigarettes again. And I just remember hanging out at my neighbor's, smoking and drinking, and my wife being there going, do you have to smoke? Right? And I'm like, yes, I've smoked. You know, it was disgusting. And Yeah. So, yeah, just, you know, I always tell people, especially new people or, you know, like if I'm working, I had someone ask me if I'd be their sponsor. And I said, yeah, I mean, you know, call me every day. And you know, and these, the person was like kind of in and out a little bit. And I was like, and the person was like, you know, I was like, why am I driving down this? And I go, you know, write that stuff down. Write all of that down, you know, and we'll talk about it. Because, you know, I think we would, you know, obviously think, well, maybe watching commercials or driving by liquor stores or, you know, having it in the house would be the obvious things that is going to make us pick up a drink again. But it can be other things, right? It can be pushing away our job, pushing away close people in our family, pushing away our wives or husbands, right? Separating ourselves with great justified reasons, right? I don't like the way she's doing this, or I don't like the way he's doing this. And all of a sudden you start feeling like maybe my life would be better without them, right? That's the devil. That is absolutely the devil. It has nothing to do with drinking, right? But these are all the things that we have in place that we've earned back, right? When I came into this program, I had an apartment and a car and a shitty job, right? And then I got sober and I built a life. I earned things back, right? I worked for them. You know, it's amazing how many things want to be part of your life if you're just running a decent life. And I earn these things back, right? And then the earning, these are, you know, things that make me feel good and show me what recovery is all about. But, you know, when the devil decides he's going to try to take you back, that's the first thing he starts pushing him out, is all the shit that we've brought back into our life, a good job, our wife, our husband, whatever it is. They start going first, right? It isn't I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm just saying, you know, for me, it was all of a sudden, it was taking all the other stuff out of my life. And then finally, you know, walking into that house that day, and my mother-in-law saying, "You're drunk." And I said, "I know," and woke up to the empty house the next day. And that, check, the devil had done it, right? The weird thing was, is that, you know, I did, because I drank for another week after that. And then I was on this porch, and had just been partying, and was like, fuck. I've shared the story, you know, and I just had this moment and I made a phone call, right? I had had a taste of recovery. And so I do think everybody's story is different. It didn't take a punch in the face. I did lose everything, but I was actually okay with it, right? I was like, okay, no problem, you know, with the devil running the show. I was like, no problem, whatever. But then I had this moment of clarity and I was able to make a phone call, and Marvin L. came and picked me up, took me to York, Pennsylvania, and that would be the beginning of my recovery. So every story is different, but, you know, it's a two-headed monster, right? It's a two-headed monster, and once we pour it in, there's not anything we can do, right? Once you've drank, I always say, if you've had a drink that night, don't bother calling me. There is nothing I can do for you. There's nothing I can do for you, but once that a drink gets out of you, and maybe you have a little window there, maybe we can all jump in and support you. But once it goes in, there isn't a word in the books that'll help you, right? It's the other half. It's that voice that tells us, you know, this is a good idea, you know, get rid of our family, all the shit that starts putting us closer to having that drink again. All right, I'm going to read the Daily Reflections, and, you know, off we go. Off we go for another day. Let's see, Daily Reflections. A lifetime process, April 6th. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, page 52. These words remind me that I have more problems than alcohol. That alcohol is only a symptom of a more pervasive disease. When I stopped drinking, I began a lifetime process of recovery from unruly emotions, painful relationships, and unmanageable situations. This process is too much for most of us without help from a higher power or our friends in the fellowship. When I began working the steps of AA program, many of these tangled threads unraveled, but little by little, the most broken places of my life straightened out. One day at a time, almost predictably, I healed. Here, a thermostat began turned down. Excuse me. Like a thermostat being turned down, my fears diminished. I began to experience moments of commitment, contentment. My emotions became less volatile, and I am now once again part of the human family. Yeah. It's the devil. Being possessed by a devil is fucked up. It is, but, you know, and people think, oh, that's a weird way to put it, right? It is for me, absolutely true. If you don't think that that's true, it's probably the devil telling you it ain't true, because it's being possessed. You know, you talk to people in recovery, you talk to people that have been sober, you talk to people that go back out, they are different, right? They're, like I said, they don't walk, talk, eat, drink, all the shit, everything changes. Their whole perception is different. And it's like being, it's allowing the devil back in. And so, you know, when one of the things about when we finally get sober and recover is just to be free of that, we notice it, the people around us notice it, and it's a freaking great feeling. All right, I got to go. Have a great day. I appreciate you for letting me share, and we will talk later. Bye.